Welcome to the Jump Ball Podcast. I'm your host, Mo Dockiel, and today my guest is Sam Amick from USA Today and the co-host of the NBA A to Z podcast. We got into just what a wacky season this was in the NBA, and then we got a couple of tips from Sam on how to break it into the media industry if anybody's interested. So, you ready to tip it off? Hey, Sam, how you doing?
No, I'm doing great. Long overdue. Thanks for having me, man.
Oh, no, my pleasure, man. My pleasure. You're one of my favorites. Podcast, you and Jeff, always kind of breaking things down. Always have interesting guests. I really like the Larry Kuhn episode you guys had a few weeks back. Just because it was a great, interesting story, and just to hear that kind of side of things. So I highly recommend
it. Listen, I appreciate it. I thought Larry was great. I thought you were great when you were on. I always like the inside hoops aspect. You know, Larry brings a unique vantage point. You bring a unique vantage point. You were telling a lot of great stories from your Clippers days and other experiences that you've had. I mean, I feel like it's a, and you know, doing your own pod, that it's a cool platform where it's only for the most hardcore of the fans, but it makes a certain audience happy in a way that ends up being, I think, rewarding for the people who are doing it. So Jeff and I have a good time with it.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And, you know, we got to kind of talk about the season. You know, it was a weird NBA season in terms of just weird storylines. I mean, we've had Markelle Fultz situation. We had the Kawhi Leonard issue. We had Soupgate. We had secret tunnels. We've had, I mean, there's so many different things, you know, the I don't want to be here text, the tweet. When you kind of just go through it, there's so many more that I'm probably even forgetting. I mean, obviously the burner gate in Philly, and it's just so many different storylines. Like, can you ever remember an NBA season being this sort of dramatic? It was very soap opera-y.
I can't. I mean, it's always hard because you have recency bias and you just, you know, whatever happened latest is what you remember the most. But I think it is arguably the most wacky season in my time covering the league, which is going down to or back to 2004, you know, in 2010 nationally. It's a good indication, Mo, that there was a lot of drama and a lot of just like unprecedented storylines that you just rattled off that list. And first of all, I was assuming you had written down a list. I don't think you did, but like there are so many that you should write them down and chronicle all of them. But how about the fact that you didn't even mention Kevin Durant and his alleged burner account early in the season, you know, tweeting about OKC and why he left? I mean, the fact that kind of a story could get lost in the shuffle is kind of all you need to know about the way this season went.
Right. I mean, that's true. There are so many. It's just hard to, I mean, it's just hard to keep up. It was like every week, you know, I would wake up to Twitter and then it would be buzzing with some sort of story where I'm like, this is actually happening.
Right. Well, let's play the power rankings game. Like what was your personal favorite among that group from an entertainment standpoint? And as a guy who, you know, has been around the league for a long time, what was, you know, Mo's number one?
Yeah. I partly because, personally, like just having been involved and knowing both sides, the tunnel incident and knowing sure. Exactly the tunnel and the route in which it wasn't very much a secretive tunnel the way they described it, but knowing the whole thing and the route of that, and kind of laughing a little bit just because, you know, we had an issue with the Clippers Warriors after game 7 in the playoffs a few years back. Where a very similar thing
there.
Happened. Yeah, similar thing happened. So I just kind of laughed. I was like, this is it all over again. But the Warriors never really got into the locker room where it sounded like the Rockets did.
Do you remember the spark of that that Clippers-Warriors back and forth? I can't out my source. I personally know the guy who, you know, somebody – had on the Clippers side, and this is your bailiwick, so you can correct me if you need to, but you know, you guys had won in 7 games, a spirited series. And it was kind of the beginning of the Warriors trying to make a dent in the second season and be a legitimate team. And so my, the way it was told to me is someone on the Clippers side had shouted over to the Warriors locker room, like, it's awfully quiet over there. And, and, somebody took exception to it, and next thing you know, they were off and running. But I don't know how. I mean, did you have a front row seat to that one, or what was your recollection?
I didn't have a front row seat to what it actually happened, but that is pretty much the story. The thing is, there's a small hallway, and from what I understand, the Warriors had a post-game spread set up there, which, you know, some teams do and have post-game meals set up for the guys.
Right.
And a lot of guys were in that hallway, and from there they were able to hear that, and then that led to the commotion. And that was that was during the whole Sterling fiasco during that series. It was a very emotional series.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's just where that came from, but it, please go ahead.
No, I was going to say, what else made me laugh? And if you fast forward to the Rockets Clippers iteration of the Secret Tunnel saga, it was a lesson. I don't know how to say this, like in a reminder in the power of politics, whether it's the NBA, whether it's actual politicians, and I'm not going to sit up here and call anybody a liar, because that would be untoward of me. But the idea that, you know, right after it all happened, the story immediately became that, oh no, you know, Harden and Chris Paul, they had nothing to do with it. They were trying to pull guys back. They were peacekeepers, you know. And then you talk to people on the Clippers side, and it's like, oh yeah, sure, they were peacekeepers. It reminded me, and this is probably a politically incorrect example to bring up, but like, you know, like, remember when Chris Carter, the old Vikings receiver, got in trouble for publicly, like, he had met with, I want to say, the NFL Players Association, and he had advised players to always have a fall guy if they get in trouble.
Right.
It was like that. I felt like that applied to the Secret Tunnel saga. That the second that, you know, that Gerald Green stormed in there, that they looked at Gerald and said, all right, there's our guy. There's our dude. It's him. In fact, Game of Zones even had fun with that. The like fantastic Bleacher Report animation they did. You probably saw it where they said it was Chris Paul saying, "All right, Gerald, you know you want a guaranteed contract. You're the guy."
Right. Well, the best part about the whole thing too was Clint Capella either getting lost or being used as a diversionary, knocking on the door. Hilarious to me. I don't know. I think it'd be funnier if it was more he kind of just got lost on the way and ended up in the front door.
The reality is, I don't actually think, and I mean, God forbid we deal in reality, because social media is so much fun, but it also, unfortunately, it does lead to more inaccuracies in wild moments like this, because there is a pressure to report in real time. And then I think what happens with that is just sometimes you end up having to clean up the record later. But I really, I've been, definitively told Clint was nowhere to be found during that entire saga. But, you know, he still becomes part of the Game of Zones. And you know, what's the old saying about, you know, the truth? Or, you know, a lie gets halfway around the world before the truth has a chance to put its pants on.
Yeah.
I think that certainly applied.
Absolutely.
In that situation.
Let's just let the legend grow. I just think that would be more fun with it. You know, let's just let this continue on.
Sorry, man. I got excited. I didn't know we were doing the Secret Tunnels pod today. Continue.
It's fun, man. But this is just like, that happened in February, I think, and it feels like a year ago. We've had so much happen.
Well, and this is not as comical, but then let's fast forward and make it more timely and relevant right now. Like, honestly, Mo, having just gotten done covering the NBA Finals, the LeBron hand situation, you could maybe put it on that same list, in terms of just weirdness. The finals come to an end, and the game's greatest player, we come to find out in the moments after Game 4, it's like, wait, what? He punched a whiteboard and he hurt his hand, and we've been watching this guy for 3 games and we had no idea that, you know, that he's actually pretty hurt. And it was a lot to wrap your head around, and it was also kind of par for the course for the whole season.
Yeah, I mean, even the the Game 1 J.R. Smith fiasco, that's
100%
on par for the weird NBA season that we've had. I think
100%.
You know, I think just a lot of interesting things. What was your favorite, so of these storylines or of what's happened this season, what's the one thing, a personal favorite or just something where you're like, this was awesome or whatnot. What was one of your favorite things that happened this year?
I don't know which one I would apply awesome to. Like, so I'll compartmentalize a few of them. Like the Sixers thing, admittedly, I wasn't digging too deep on that story. We, you know, the way our place kind of works, Jeff Zilgit a lot of times winds up being Eastern Conference heavy. So he was leading the way on the reporting on the Colangelo stuff. So I almost had more of an observer role. And so I wasn't thick in it, but it was just wild, you know, and it was somewhat unprecedented because the way it got reported, you know, listen, media is changing. And, you know, I don't know that the way it got reported would have held up in an old school journalism 101 classroom, but it still had, there was so much smoke there that it still ended up having obviously a real significant impact. And then when the independent investigation happened, they found enough to justify firing Brian Colangelo in their eyes. So that one was wild and also a sign of the times. You know, I had seen like a SportsCenter hit where Woj had called it unprecedented. And I was thinking to myself whether or not that was true. And I think it is. Like it's an accurate statement because that's what, you know, social media has done. And it's been around for a minute now, but the idea of burner accounts and the way that it was all unwrapped was just insane. You know, I don't know which one other than that, the secret tunnel thing we hit on. I mean, again, this one's fresh, but the JR stuff was just wild because when I was at game one, you know, at Oracle Arena, you're sitting at the top of the lower bowl and you're also to give people kind of the behind the curtain look at our specific jobs. Like for an NBA finals game, you know, we need to file something, some sort of quick analysis, like essentially right after the buzzer. And so unfortunately what winds up happening sometimes is you're not watching the game as closely as you would otherwise because you're writing, you're trying to get enough thoughts together that you're ready to submit something at the end of the game. And so I didn't notice right away what happened with JR. And then I had, you know, Jeff and somebody else next to me, I think it was John Schumann of NBA.com, sitting there going, yo, like he just didn't know the score. And I'm sitting there going, wait a minute, what? And I had to go back and watch the replay. And then it's just unbelievable. So that one is crazy, especially because of the implications. Like, this is the Cavs' last best chance to convince LeBron that he shouldn't go anywhere. This is, you know, this is the finals, and this is a chance to go up 1-0 on the Warriors' home floor. And maybe, I'm just going to be dramatic because it's more fun, maybe just alter the landscape of the NBA forever and convince LeBron to stay, you know, because maybe just a glimmer of hope would be enough for him to feel good about it. So instead, you just do the last thing that you needed. You make LeBron feel like, I mean, my God, Mo, you think it's a coincidence that after that game, he started opining about how much he wants to play with high IQ basketball players? Like, right. You know, I mean, it wasn't exactly subtweeting. I mean, these were like direct shots. So that one was pretty wild to cover.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing about it for LeBron, it's like, it's so deflating. You know, like everybody right. was killing them about the timeouts, and some people were like, that's poor leadership. So listen, you got to go through it to understand that. I mean, if you're really sure. looking at that and expecting a guy to just be able to come back from that, he gave him everything he had. And then that situation, you know, it's a deflating thing. Like everybody knew at that moment, you had to have felt like, okay, it's over. The Cavs are going to lose this one.
Right.
And unfortunately that was the case for the Cavs. And the other thing too, you know, I give him credit for punching the whiteboard and not JR. Like I feel like there are a few legends who we know who probably would have punched him in the moment or
right.
close to
right.
it, you know? So
yeah.
You got to give him a little bit of credit for not actually physically.
I mean, especially when JR just owns it. Remember in real time, you can read his lips on the court and and it's like, oh man, you talk about cringeworthy. Like he looks at LeBron and says, I thought we were ahead. I mean, you know, that's when you put him over your leg and kind of wallop him like he's your 5-year-old. I mean, that's rough. But again, that's what made the hand thing so surreal. Cause you talk about putting a weird little bow on the whole series is like, in that moment when you had almost kind of forgotten about the JR thing, at least, you know, in the chaos of the championship scene, then, and, you know, and I don't mind sharing, I always kind of enjoy getting into the media nuts and bolts. It's like, you know, I'm leaving the press room and figuring out what I'm going to get into, figuring out who I can talk to. And I wind up, you know, it was kind of a random thing. And I certainly can't say who I was talking to, but chatting with somebody. And we talked for 3-4 minutes about the game and the series. And then at the end, it was just this casual mention, like, you know, LeBron's hurt. And I was like, what are you talking about, the ankle? He said, no, not the ankle, the hand. And I'm sitting there like my eyes popping out of my head. Like, what are you talking about? And, you know, then it, from there, you know, then it gets confirmed and you're going, holy Toledo. Like, you know, we probably could have guessed that behind the scenes, LeBron was pretty irate because of the way game one went, but it just, it brought a realness to it that we had not been aware of until that point. So it was crazy.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, he had a 30-point triple double in the finals after that. Like, that's impressive in its own right, doing that with a broken hand.
Yeah.
You know, like all of that. It's funny because it did remind me of a story I heard third hand from a college basketball coach, which I'll bore everybody with real quickly. We were at a Hawaii Hilo University, and one of the coaches was telling me a story of how their head coach was so frustrated at halftime. You know, he came storming into the locker room and punched the whiteboard, which was screwed into a brick wall. And essentially, and you know, and he punches the whiteboard and then just continues on, like, jumping all over his guys. And, you know, in college, like, these dudes, you know, a lot of college coaches don't have a problem berating their team, which is weird in its own right.
Sure.
And then, you know, as soon as he's done, he just slowly, you know, the story is he just kind of limps out and goes straight to the trainer going, like, yo, I broke my hand.
That's rough.
And I was just like, oh, well, that's what you get. But that
well,
kind of brought
since
that.
We're sharing fun coaching fury stories, or, you know, player coaching fury stories. You gave me a flashback to, I don't know what year, if I had to guess, like 2011. Eric Musselman, coach of the Reno Bighorns at the time, before his Nevada Reno glory that he, you know, I'm happy for him. He's having a great run right now, but Eric, who I covered when he was coach of the Kings, you know, and then he was doing the D-League thing for a while, D-League showcase, they, and I'm sure you've seen this, Mo, where they, you know, the space is limited inside the gym in Reno, and they have, like, essentially, like, cubicles set up for each team, where I don't know what you call them, just the fake walls that they prop up, and those become the locker rooms for each team. And so Eric is undressing his team at halftime. He's not happy with how they're playing, and he may have put a hole in one of those fake walls and made a little noise. I think a chair might have flown. He was pretty hot one time.
just happens, man. That ball of emotion gets going, and that's what it is, you know.
Hey, I love it. It's, you know, emotion's good. That's why we cover this. Yeah, stuff. I mean, that's the thing too. Like, to bring it back to LeBron, I think that's what was so interesting. And actually, Jeff and I just got done recording our pod this morning, and we talked about this, how, like, it was an interesting side of LeBron that we haven't really seen. Like, he's not known to be, like, you know, on the court, if somebody tries to beef with him and start a fight, like, he's never having it. He just finds a way. He's got this amazing ability to not compromise any of his manhood. Like, he doesn't leave anybody feeling like he's a punk, because he's not. But he also doesn't feel compelled to always, you know, go chest to chest with every guy who tries to ruffle his feathers. And so he's got this poise that we've seen for a long time. And like you said earlier, if ever he was going to crack, it was going to be this moment. And clearly he did behind the scenes.
Yeah. And just, I can't fault him on that. I just, anybody that's trying to find fault for it or call it bad leadership or whatever, they're just searching for reasons, in my opinion, to discredit or dislike LeBron. It's just, we've all had moments where we've had extreme disappointment, and you're despondent for a little bit. It just happens. So I think,
no, I agree. I'm torn on that one though, and this is like more in the interest of just trying to always be a fair and objective media member. Like, on the one hand, I definitely understand why he did it, but I think it's unfair to all the other guys in the league to not have a certain level of scrutiny surrounding it. Like, the bottom line is, he did hurt his team. And I don't necessarily disagree. I'm trying to think who this was. I think it was Matt Steinmetz, who used to cover the Warriors in the Bay and is now a radio personality at their flagship radio station, 95.7. Matt had a tweet where he said that, you know, what J.R. Smith did was stupid. What LeBron did hurt his team even more. And it's hard to argue, you know, just with that idea that you can understand something, but also realize that it did hurt his team. There's kind of no way around that.
Oh, no, absolutely agree with you on that. You know, people went after Marcus Smart this season after he broke his hand or cut up his hand on a fire extinguisher or something after the Laker game.
Right.
We've had an
Right.
incident with Amari Stoudemire, Enes Kanter, I think it was, who broke his forearm on it.
Wait a minute, were you still? I don't think you were still with the Clippers when he got in the fight with Matias Testi, were you?
No, that was the year I was gone. But it was funny because I had at least three text messages from friends who didn't know that I was no longer with the team. But they're like, "Yo, did you get in a fight with Blake?"
Right.
I was like, "Nope, fellas."
Yeah, so I mean, self-inflicted is that's the phrasing that LeBron picked, and he's right. There's kind of no way around that.
Yeah, self-inflicted, and you can give him, you can definitely kind of. He should get some flack for that, at that least, of like, yo, you can't just punch a wall, you know, for the amount of times
Right.
we give those guys. But like the leadership stuff.
Is it bad, Mo, that I kind of want the whiteboard? Like, I want to put that in my office.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. That's memorabilia. Like, how is that not somewhere? Like,
I know.
isn't there a there's a hole in the visitors' locker room in Golden State at Oracle. You know, from Dirk Nowitzki throwing a chair. Like, there's.
Right. That's the thing. And I hate to out myself on your pod because then some of my competitors might steal the idea. But like, I've already placed a phone call trying to locate the whiteboard. I've not had any luck, and nor have I received any confirmation that there's like visible damage to the whiteboard. Because who knows? It could have been a glancing blow. So I don't know where it is. But yeah, I mean, that's the thought, is that at Oracle, it's Dirk Nowitzki when the We Believe Warriors knocked off the number one seeded Mavs. Dirk, I forget whatever year that was. You know, Dirk came off the floor and he chucked a chair up against the wall and it put a hole. So they commemorated that moment by putting a We Believe t-shirt over the hole. And then Dirk, to his credit, because he's a good sport, ended up signing it, autographing it, you know, years later. And then there's been a lot of that stuff. I remember, this is not quite as memorable, but when the Warriors beat the Nuggets in the playoffs, man, what year? So maybe 13, something like that. This is the year before Andre Iguodala came to town. So the George Karl Nuggets, you know, lose to the Warriors. And Kenneth Faried put a big old hole in the front wall right as you walk into the visitors' locker room. I actually remember I took a picture of it as I walked in, and that puppy went viral right away. You could almost, you know, see the Nike logo on the outskirts of you know, where Kenneth had just, you know, let his rage come out. So it's an emotional sport, man.
I mean, you always hear about like didn't like Shaq or somebody destroy some TVs after getting knocked out of a playoff
Right.
series? I mean, you always hear stories like that, and again, it's just a lot of emotion comes out. And unfortunately for LeBron in this case, he ended up walking away with a broken hand because of it. But man, if you could find that
Right.
whiteboard, I just want to know what it looks like. You know, like how did the whiteboard stand up to the punch? Does it have a good chin? Did it take the hit?
This is my new life goal. This whiteboard needs to be, I'm literally staring at a whiteboard in my office right now, but it pales in comparison because I'll put like story ideas up there, and things like that. I think I need to get my hands on the LeBron whiteboard. That would be the crowning achievement of my career.
Yeah, no, that would be big. That would be big. You know, let me ask you this, and then I'll let you go. I'm kind of throwing a curveball at you a little bit here, Sam. So
No
forgive me.
worries.
So forgive me, but you know, you've been in the game for a long time. You've covered. You know, you've been everywhere. You on the road, traveling, and everything. With this kind of summer coming up and everything, give a suggestion for up and coming writers or young guys, even guys like me who just kind of, you know, trying to break through, like throw out, like, you know, maybe a tip or something that you're kind of going behind the curtain a little bit with the media stuff. Maybe you can kind of drop a tip or two.
Sure. No, I would be happy to. I mean, my thought is this. On the one hand, I would say that, like, the industry has changed so much that I find myself, like, I used to have, like, a blueprint answer to that question, and I would recommend, you know, do this, you know, do this and this and this, and it's 2 + 2 = 4, and you'll be in good shape. And that's kind of disappeared because things have evolved and they've changed, some for the better, some for the worse, where there's not nearly as clear a path anymore for people who would like to do this for a living. And I take pride in, like, I'm trying to learn as much as I can in real time now, because I feel guilty not being able to have a really helpful answer in 2018 to tell young people, because I think, you know, everybody needs guidance. I got help when I was coming up. But the one thing that has not changed and that I would highly recommend is that, you know, I love, and I need to figure out who I'm quoting, just because I love this saying, but I don't know where it came from. It's just the idea that, you know, 90% of success is showing up. And so by that, I mean that I continue to see countless examples of young people who, through, you know, some form or fashion, they found their way into an NBA arena, whether it was an internship with a certain media company, whether it was working with the team PR staff, whatever avenue you need to get in the building, AKA showing up, then working your way out from there, being yourself, trying to meet as many people as possible and establish relationships. That continues to be at least one thing I think you can kind of sink your teeth into, and that has not changed over the years. And, you know, one of my favorite recent examples, and I'll enjoy, you know, blowing his ego up a little bit by sharing his story. He's a good friend of mine, is a young guy named Logan Murdoch from the Bay Area News Group. I was thinking about Logan because when I would be around Kings games, I honestly to this day could not tell you exactly who Logan was representing years ago. But, like, Logan was a guy who would get a credential, come to games, befriend certain people like me and others in the media, and he would take kind of the fly on the wall approach. And I'm talking at this point, he's honestly like 18, 19 years old. He's still in school doing his thing. And he learned. And now Logan is covering the Warriors as part of the team at the Bay Area News Group with Mark Medina, Dan Brown, Melissa Rowland, Dieter Kurtenbach, part of their group that does such a great job. And he's a legit, I mean, I was with him in Houston for the West Finals. He did the NBA Finals, and I'm very happy for him. But it's also, he's kind of become my latest example and kind of reaffirming that those things matter, because he came in, he not only made media contacts, but he started trying to get to know whether it was the players themselves or the coaches or the agents. And he's got a good way about him, and which is also important, that people find themselves enjoying their interactions with you. And next thing you know, you're getting more comfortable and you're figuring out how to navigate some of these media waters that are extremely tricky. So I think relationships matter, being humble as far as coming in the door and just being a sponge. I mean, a lot of these parallels, Mo, that I feel like we could, you know, substitute player with reporter, or even, you know, video coordinator with reporter. You get the point. Like, there are these universal truths that apply to a lot of what all of us do. And I think, you know, this is no different.
Yeah, no, I think those are great. That's a great note to end on, really. Just, you know, showing up is 90% of it. We'll have to research and figure out where the quote came from. But but that's a great way of putting it. And that's,
but it's just getting your way in, you know, yeah, what I mean? Like, and that's the tricky part. I mean, here's, even to be honest, to put the cherry on top of that idea with my own story, it's like, that's how I got in. So when I was, and this is, I'm going to date myself, it's 1998. I'm still going to Sacramento State and I'm just trying to get my foot in the door, and I'm not worried about what my title is or, you know, anything of that nature. I'm just worried about getting access. So I get a job as a sports clerk at the Sacramento Bee, which was essentially like answering phones to you know, register and log high school football scores, and running, I'm making Taco Bell runs for everybody on the copy desk. Like, I'm a grunt worker, But guess what? I'm a grunt worker who now can say hello to the sports editor, Tom Negrete at the time, and get to know him. And now, like, I'm showing up. I got in the building and I worked my way out from there. So, you know, that's how, because then you have a chance to kind of present yourself to the world and to start convincing people of influence that you're worth investing time and money in down, you know, at some point down the line. And, you know, that's kind of how you get it done.
Perfect. That's perfect. Sam, I know you got to go. That's a great way to end it there. Do you have anything coming out besides hunting for the whiteboard? Anything else coming out that we should be looking for?
It's going to be a long form story. My search for LeBron's whiteboard. We're pivoting into draft mode. Jay-Z, Jeff Zogut, and I were talking this morning. We got a new mock draft coming out tomorrow. A lot of debate about number two and the Kings. I think a little sneak preview. I'm a little bit of a risky pick. We're probably putting Michael Porter Jr. in that spot, which is going to raise a lot of eyebrows around the NBA. So the draft stuff is front and center. And then it's just going to be trying to learn as much as possible about, you know, LeBron and where his head is at, all these other pieces, Chris Paul, Paul George, you know, maybe some surprise stars being part of the conversation as well. Kawhi Leonard in San Antonio, how's that going to end? So as you know, it's crazy that you hit the finals finish line, but then you know that it's not even close to the finish line. We got about a month to go, and I'm looking forward to it. It should be fun.
Perfect. Well, everybody, I highly recommend go check out the A to Z podcast with him and Jeff Zilgit. If you go back a few episodes, you'll hear my dulcet tones on the podcast. That's it, man. Sam, thank you so much for coming on.
No, you got it. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you.
That's it for our show. Be sure to rate us, like us, leave reviews on Google Play, SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever else you go to listen to your podcast, and support us on patreon.com.